The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
I'm always going to show up for the people of Chicago. And because there's a need for real critical investment, something that has not happened in a substantive way for at least the last 40 years, I am proud to show up for the people of Chicago calling for those type of investments.
Hi, everybody. I'm Fran Spielman. My guest this week is a man who is celebrating his one-year anniversary as mayor of Chicago. Mayor Brandon Johnson, congratulations and welcome back.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate you having me back.
Joining me in questioning the mayor are my two colleagues from our partners at WBEZ Radio, Mariah Wolfel and Tessa Weinberg. Thank you both as well. Mayor Johnson, what have you learned about yourself over the last year? How have you changed?
Well, first of all, you know, serving in this capacity as mayor of the greatest city in the world has been just a true honor, of my current phase in my life. And, you know, what I've learned is that, teaching middle school and serving as an organizer and growing up in a working class family certainly prepared me for this job. You're dealing with a lot of interests, different personalities. You're dealing with hopes and aspirations, but you're also dealing with, real fears that people have. And, my life has surrounded me, quite frankly, with those scenarios, and it certainly has prepared me for this current experience as mayor of the city of Chicago.
What's been the biggest growing pain and the biggest surprise for you, sir?
I think in growth, look, there's been 40 years at the very least of real serious neglect in the city of Chicago. And that has really played out in many of our communities that have been historically marginalized. And the type of transformation that we need for today and long term, there are frustrating moments that I do have where you just wish you can address everything at the same time, and that's just unfortunately not where we are, just because the damage has been so severe and it has been so widespread that it really requires the type of strategic investments that I'm making. As far as the surprise is concerned, I am always, pleasantly surprised by just the resilience of the people of Chicago. Look, there are a lot of things that we can celebrate, from our critical investments into, housing and mental health care and youth employment. But I am, really overjoyed by the level of commitment and hopefulness that the people of Chicago have displayed.
And if you had one something to take back, one decision, one thing, what would that be, sir?
I probably should sleep in a little bit more. I wake up pretty early every single day, and that's just my nature and how I was raised. I probably could spend a little bit more time, with the family, but, I'm sure every single dad in Chicago and in America probably feels the same way.
Mariah?
Thanks, Mayor. I'm sure this past year has also been about relationship building. I'm wondering which coalitions, which relationships you've built strongest with in the past year.
Well, I mean, it's been, you know, a really remarkable journey, quite frankly. I mean, you know, I've said this, you know, before, that the trajectory that I've been on to become the mayor of the city of Chicago is different than previous administrations, right? And so, you know, fortifying our relationships with the people who were part of my launch, if you will. These are, you know, people who are very much tied to the community. They're, you know, aligned with the interests and values of working people. And I've certainly grown my relationships with the philanthropic and the business community. You know, the civic committee has been very supportive of my community safety plan. We've obviously made some significant inroads with the airlines, United and American, you know, from a couple of administrations ago. You know, those negotiations, you know, unfortunately, along with put the city of Chicago in a position where we had to obviously revisit it. The pandemic certainly created some challenges there as well. And we were able to not only fortify that relationship, but, you know, come to an agreement. Our relationship with Chase, you know, Quentin Primo, who is a main developer of Google. So the faith community, I mean, so these relationships have continued to grow over time. And but that's what's necessary to build a better, stronger state for Chicago. It's literally going to take all of us to do that.
Tessa? Oh, sorry. Just one follow up. Which relationships have been the most challenging? Where do you think you still have work to do in the next year?
I mean, look, there are, you know, even with our strongest relationships, there are still, you know, elements that we have to work through. You know, that's like in any relationship. So I don't, you know, really, you know, see our growth as a indication that there's been challenge there. That's just the nature of relationships.
Tessa?
Mayor, turning to city council a little bit, you've already had to cast two tie-breaking votes in your first year. Your support of the ceasefire resolution is a factor several Jewish leaders pointed to when they refused to attend your roundtable discussion on anti-Semitism recently. How do you go about repairing that damage?
Well, there were individuals who are part of the Jewish community that did show up. And, you know, what I said, you know, at that round table, when I said to individuals who did not show up, that I'm going to show up every single day for the people of Chicago. That's my job. I don't take days off. I don't decide that because I may be in disagreement with someone that I don't show up. You know, the people of Chicago expect me to show up every single day, and I do that. You know, and as far as me calling for peace, I hardly consider that controversial. I mean, the entire country and people around the world are calling for that. And, you know, that's something that, you know, we value as residents of the city of Chicago, but it's also part of our responsibility as global residents. That calling for peace and an end to war is a part of our very profound tradition that we have here in Chicago. As far as individuals who may have disagreements with me, you know, this is not the first element in which someone has disagreed with me on. But people show up because they know that in order for us to build a better, stronger, safer Chicago, we have to be present. And so I've made a commitment to multiple constituencies, including the Jewish community, of those who are experiencing a great deal of pain right now. And look, it's not a secret that anti-Semitism is on the rise. And I wholeheartedly have condemned hate speech and anything that is anti-Semitic. And I will continue to do that.
Your second tie-breaking vote, Mayor, spared your floor leader, your former floor leader and zoning chair, Carlos Ramirez Rosa, from censure. You have yet to replace him as zoning chair. Why not? You're not going to leave Bennett Lawson in there indefinitely, are you?
Well, we're really we were focusing in on making sure that there were a few measures needed my full attention. And we were focusing on making sure those measures got done. And one of which, of course, is the $1.25 billion bond that's going to go into investing in housing and economic and workforce development. You know, as far as the reorganization of the city council, clearly we're still functioning, you know, and, you know, I have, you know, narrowed down my decision and there will be one coming soon.
Is it possible you might put Carlos back in there? Maybe was it a little hasty to take him out?
Look, remember, you know, Alderman Ramirez Rosa, he stepped down and I accepted that. And, you know, the most important thing to note in this moment is that he has done a remarkable job of strengthening relationships with his colleagues as well, because that was, you know, what was important in that particular moment that he did that. And there are, you know, many of his colleagues have expressed, you know, a deep appreciation, you know, for his willingness to listen to people, to hear people out, and to better understand where he can strengthen his relationships with his colleagues.
Mariah.
Mayor, you've started off, staying on the council for a second, you started off on a much different foot with Alderman than your predecessor, former Mayor Lori Lightfoot, you know, namely by not taking a swipe at them during your inaugural speech. You also met with each council member individually, you know, in your first 100 days of office. But we've seen some kinks since. Some have complained of you making unilateral decisions without their input, including on the migrant crisis. I'm wondering how you would characterize your relationship with the city council, and what's an area in the next year that you'd like to improve upon, and how will you specifically work on that?
Well, we're getting work done. You know, that's the most important thing. You know, this migrant crisis in particular, this mission that we've been on, you all know when I stepped into office, there were individuals who were sleeping on floors in police stations, sleeping on floors at our airports. You know, you had contracts that were bloated and it was costing the taxpayers an enormous amount of dollars without understanding the real benefit in the mission. Well, we've transformed all of that. But working with the city council, we've done it. We've saved the taxpayers over $200 million. No one is sleeping on floors in police districts, stations, or airports. We are educating thousands of children, the state, the county. We've all come together to support this mission while addressing, of course, the fact that we have a governor in the state of Texas that is determined to create chaos. So we've built order and structure and an operation that is centered around people's humanity. I did that working with city council. We've abolished subminimum wage, where over 100,000 tip workers received raises. We did that with city council. We have the most expansive paid time off of any major city in this country. Over 1 million workers will have additional time to be able to spend with their families or do or have vacation. That all of that work has been done working with city council. The work that I've done doesn't happen without those partnerships. And of course, we're going to continue to move our agenda to build a better, stronger, safer Chicago. And it is going to take all of us. But keep in mind that the work that we have gotten done in the city of Chicago, most important thing to note is that we've been able to get work done, things that have been dormant for decades.
And, is the complaint about unilateral decision making a valid one? Is that something you're aware of or working on in the next year, though?
Every decision that I've made, you know, with the authority that I have as the mayor of the city of Chicago, has been centered around collaborating with people. There's not one individual that can take sole responsibility for how we have worked towards transforming this city within my first year. And, you know, I will continue to lead because that's what I was elected to do, and I'm going to lead in a collaborative way. And we have gotten substantive work done as a result of my leadership. And as it continues to grow, our relationships, the people of Chicago will benefit from that type of work.
Tessa?
The migrant crisis that you inherited, you know, that has really dominated your first year in office. But as of now, it seems to be subsiding for the time being. The numbers of people arriving are down. Some shelters have closed. Like you said, people are not living in police stations. You know, ahead of the Democratic National Convention, your administration has warned those numbers could rocket up again. Do you expect that to happen? And what will you do if that does? And is there any chance you would revisit base camps as an option to shelter people?
Well, you know, first of all, the work that we have done to build an operation that's centered around people's humanity, there's no model that I've seen that is better than the model that we've built here in Chicago. And again, we've saved over $200 million with our plan of action, renegotiating contracts with these various entities that had pre-existing contracts before I arrived. And we're actually putting people of Chicago to work to help service, you know, these families, and bringing the state, the county together, you know, to operationalize this mission. You know, that has been the ongoing work. And yes, you're right. There are now less than 8,000 people in shelters. Again, we had as many as 15,000 at one point. 40,000 people have come our way. The state and their work with other community-based organizations and nonprofits have helped resettle families, asylum seekers. And again, we've done it without the support of the federal government. You know, the federal government has not lived up to its full responsibility. And in part because, you know, the former president, President Donald Trump, has dictated to the Republican Party that they are not allowed to negotiate with Democrats to come up with real substantive immigration reform. You know, as far as, you know, anticipation, as we continue to decompress shelters, particularly our public spaces, and now those public spaces are now, you know, available for our community, our parks and, you know, old closed school buildings. I mean, these are, you know, assets to the community that really stepped up and provided the need for these asylum seekers. I'm preparing for it, you know, but there are some limitations to what we can do. You know, because of what the governor of Texas did last year, you know, it's important that we have a number of locations that we can stand up, physical indoor locations that we can stand up in the event the governor of Texas begins to send buses in droves back our way. And one final note is that we have not had a single bus drop migrants off in the city of Chicago since the end of December. Not one bus has landed in Chicago since the end of December. And that is in part because the governor of Texas refuses to work within the confines of our ordinance that requires some coordination. He's not interested in that. He wants chaos. We've created calm and structure. And so now he's dropping off migrants in the surrounding suburbs. And so if he does accelerate the number of buses coming in our direction, it should be very clear of where he's going to send those buses. He's going to send them to the suburbs because he is not interested in providing real coordination to address this mission.
Are base camps still an option on the table for you?
No.
And also, you know, one approach that you've taken has been to apply pressure on the federal and state government, but to the public that sometimes looked like finger pointing and blame shifting. Is that a narrative you're going to try to avoid going forward? And how do you do that while also trying to continue to apply pressure for more state and federal resources?
It's the federal government's responsibility. They did it with Ukrainian asylum seekers. There are still 30,000 individuals from the Ukraine that are settled in the city of Chicago right now because the federal government actually lived up to its responsibility. That is their job. I've said it from the very beginning, whether it's New York, whether it's Denver, whether it's Wilmette, whether it's Kankakee, you know, whether it's Lombard, there is no local government in this country that is designed to carry an international resettlement for migrants. It doesn't exist. We've literally built something that has never existed before. Again, There were people living on floors, sleeping on floors in police stations, sleeping on floors in airports when I got elected. That's not happening. That's me leading and working. That's not me pointing a finger. That's me getting work done. I've gone to the city council 4 different times to secure resources to address this mission. That's getting work done.
It is my responsibility.
Let me just say this, though. It is my responsibility to challenge the federal government, in which the city of Chicago sends resources with our tax dollars to the federal government. And the federal government has a responsibility to do its job. Unfortunately, you have Republicans in Congress who refuse to work with Democrats. You have the former president of the United States of America that has dictated to the Republican Party not to do work on behalf of the people of this country.
The migrant crisis, sir, has also been a source of some of the tension between you and Governor Pritzker. More recently, you and the governor have also disagreed about the Bears Stadium and the need for a leadership change at CTA. Why do you think there's been some tension with the governor? And is it any different than the tension that I covered between, my husband covered between Richard J. Daley and Dan Walker, and I covered between Richard M. Daley and Jim Edgar and Rahm Emanuel and Pat Quinn and Bruce Rauner?
When you look at the volume of work that we've been able to accomplish together in this first year, again, working with the state of Illinois to address this migrant mission, we're doing that. I was in Springfield, pushing for the General Assembly to appropriate dollars to this mission. That's us working together. You know, and I made it very clear that in order for us to have, you know, real transformation in the city of Chicago, that I'm going to work with everyone, and I'm doing that.
Is it different, do you think, with the governor?
I can't speak to how you covered, you know, previous administrations. I actually didn't really spend a whole lot of time, you know.
Well, what I'm saying is
that working with the governor is something that is essential. And I've done that. We've done that. We've worked together to address this international crisis, you know, as far as, you know, making critical investments to build a better, stronger, safer Chicago. Of course, there'll be ongoing debates and conversations about that. Here's the problem. We have a 100-year-old building that is owed hundreds of millions of dollars in debt. That's the problem.
It's a 100-year-old building that's been rebuilt. It was rebuilt totally in 2003. It was totally rebuilt, that stadium.
So stay with me then. I'm glad you brought that up, because not only is it a 100-year-old building that there's no, with no dome, so no public benefit for it. We're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars in debt. When it was quote unquote rebuilt in 2003, 67% of the dollars that were used were public dollars to build a stadium where there's no public benefit, in which we still owe debt to. I have put forth a solution to the problem. What is that solution? That the Bears are willing to put $2 billion into the stadium. So their own money, billionaires putting their own money in it, while visitors, the hotel tax, pays for the rest. So we're talking 72%, almost 75% of the building being paid for by the billionaires. And then there's another 28% that comes from ISFA, which is designed to build stadiums. The only function of ISFA is to build stadiums. And so I have this problem. The city of Chicago has this problem. The state of Illinois has this problem. That you have a 100-year-old building that has hundreds of millions of dollars in debt, and we can't even use it beyond the 10 or 12 games. So if someone else has another solution that addresses this problem, then they should put that on the table. Now, the Bears, of course, have a responsibility, you know, to continue to make their case. But the bottom line is this. I've said from the very beginning, whatever we do, we have to invest in people. That's what I've done this first year. and there has to be a public benefit and a public use for it. The Bears have put together a proposal that absorbs 72% of the cost, and the other cost will be paid for by visitors. If someone else has a better solution to that, they should put it on the table.
Mariah.
If we want to stay on Bears for a second, Mayor, I mean, that is the breakdown when you look at the stadium itself, but the overall plan will rely on $1.5 billion in federal and state funding for infrastructure improvements. How much time and political capital are you spending to try to secure that federal funding and state funding from those legislative bodies? And does that add unnecessary strain on your relationship with those legislatures? While we've already heard in this interview, you know, you're using a lot of that political capital to try to solve the migrant crisis. Is it worth it to spend time and energy on, you know, a sports stadium when you need those relationships for other priorities?
So the question is it worth spending my time to put forth a vision that puts thousands of people to work and provide public benefit and public use, as well as infrastructure needs for the entire city of Chicago?
Or does it strain your relationship?
I hear what you're asking. You're asking me, is it worth my time to actually show up for the people of Chicago? It will always be worth my time to ensure that we're investing in people. That's what I promised I would do, and that's what I'm doing. As far as the infrastructure needs, I'm not sure if enough people get enough opportunity to hear more about the Inflation Reduction Act. We're talking about billions of dollars. This is an unprecedented amount of resources available for infrastructure. This is actually what the Biden-Harris administration, this is what they want us to do. One of the top tourist attractions for the state of Illinois is the campus in which we're talking about. Now, that's not the only place that needs infrastructure. So my ask is not limited to this particular development. It's also a need for us on the southeast side, where there are real environmental hazards that have been there for a generation now. And so we have lead service lines that need to be replaced. This is not about one stadium. This is about our vision for the entire city of Chicago. And so I'm always going to show up for the people of Chicago. And because there's a need for real critical investment, something that has not happened in a substantive way for at least the last 40 years, I am proud to show up for the people of Chicago, calling for those type of investments.
Tessa?
On the Bears, you know, they also are seeking to keep revenue from other events like concerts that take place at the stadium, which would leave a major hole in the Park District's budget. Will you commit to not allowing the Bears to keep that revenue?
This is a proposal. So there's still negotiations that are being done around, you know, revenue sharing. This is a proposal.
And the effort to bring Chicago home failed. What lessons did you learn from that defeat, sir?
Well, what I've done since I've been in office this first year, I've committed $250 million to deal with this housing crisis. We've already built 100 affordable housing units. There are another 700 that are being built now on the south and west sides of Chicago. I've talked about my $1.25 billion bond that's going to build housing, create economic development within our communities, the largest bond in the history of Chicago. Those investments go right to the people of Chicago who have been harmed the most, particularly on the west and south sides of the city of Chicago. The individuals that fought against the people of Chicago to create more revenue to address this crisis did not just start fighting me. As I pointed out, you know, when Hood County Board President John Stroger attempted to raise this particular tax, they attacked him before he can even get a vote on it. And then they went to Springfield to work with the Republicans to make it only by ballot referendum to be able to have this conversation to shift this revenue to address these needs. So in other words, you know, the big lesson is that the people who opposed Cook County Board President John Stroger, the people that opposed me, and all we were trying to do was make sure that there's revenue to address this crisis.
Now, you've recently done some things that have pleased the business community. Cut the tape, LaSalle Street Reimagined to convert the old office buildings to residential. The bond issue, as you mentioned. The deal with United and American. Even so, sir, the Better Government Association President David Greising says that the business leaders that he talks to, quote, feel like they still don't know him, still don't understand what he's trying to do and what they can do for him, and still don't feel heard by him. Do you agree with that?
Well, I think there are a couple other things that we should note that have been very much pro-business. You know, eliminating sub-minimum wage, that is pro-business. Anything that we do for workers, it benefits business. Now you have workers who were fleeing the industry are now returning to the industry because you have better pay. That's good for business. Pay time off, that's good for business. So it's not just, you know, paid time off, certainly not just abolishing the sub-minimum wage. Yes, it includes the agreement with the airlines, the investments Chase is making, the investment that Google is making, the affordable housing that is being built in the Loop, right? Where we're taking these old office spaces and converting them into living corridors, talking about 1,100 of them, of which 30% will be affordable. The work that we have done to build a better, stronger, safer Chicago has been collaborative. Whether that's working with our workforce, working with our business community, with our faith community, is it gonna take some people some time to adjust to this new formation that we have in Chicago? Absolutely, it's gonna take some time. You know, look, let's just be honest here. The way these systems have been built, particularly government, they have been built in a very complex way to favor the hand, the few. They've been built to favor the few. And quite frankly, there has been an sort of an unfettered access of a handful of powerful people having access to the fifth floor. Now we have a situation where people who may not have been as, maybe they're not used to sharing. And that's going to take them some adjustment. Look, I taught middle school. So I can tell you the things that prepared me to be the mayor of the city of Chicago is working with young people, organizing around this city, serving, of course, as a legislator, and now having spent a year in this office, that there's no better way to lead the city than doing it together. And that's
Mariah,
what you've named everything that you named is real indication of the work that I've done, particularly with the business community.
Mayor, last month, the Illinois legislature took this kind of astonishingly overwhelming vote to curb the power of the CPS board when it comes to closing schools and funding Chicago selective enrollment schools. The vote was 92-8. Similar action yesterday on a vote when you were in Springfield yourself. What message do you take from that?
Well, as you all know, we have a very underfunded school district. The state of Illinois conservatively owes the people of Chicago $1.1 billion. You know, and I worked hard to shift and change the funding formula in my previous capacity. And we have leaders like Representative Will Davis that certainly have led the issue of education. And Senator Leader Lightford has been a staunch advocate for education in this state. And I'm going to continue to work with those leaders to ensure that the city of Chicago receives its fair share. Now, because it's underfunded and it has been historically defunded, that we also have a very stratified school district. It's hyper-segregated. That plays out in a very dramatic way within our selective enrollment schools in particular. So for instance, you know, Whitney Young High School in 2001 had 41% of the student population there were Black students, and is now down to 18 or 19. Walter Payton was 34% in 34% Black, and now it's down to 9%. Lane Tech, the Black population has been cut in half. Many Brown students are underrepresented in all of our selective enrollment high schools. And so what the people of Chicago said a year ago, they voted for me because they know that I'm uniquely positioned to transform our public school system. I'm the first mayor of the history of Chicago to have taught in our public schools. I'm the only mayor in the history of Chicago, as far as we know, that actually sends their children to the Chicago public schools. So I've been a teacher, been an organizer, and I actually utilize the system, and I'm a proud product of our public education system in this state. And I know what it takes from a teacher's perspective, as well as a parent's perspective and a student's perspective, to have a more transformational educational experience. And that's what our focus has to be: funding our schools and actually transforming them so that they are fully expressed in an equitable way.
I'm assuming that those are pitches that you made to the Illinois legislature in hopes that they wouldn't pass this bill. What message do you take that they went ahead and curbed that power regardless?
Well, that power has not been curbed. It has not. I mean, it's not a law, so nothing has happened.
Not yet. It hasn't been signed by the governor or passed by the Senate.
It has not been, so nothing has happened.
Yeah, I'm speaking about the vote that they took, which was overwhelmingly in favor of it.
Which vote?
Both of them.
The vote to curb the power of the CPS board when it comes to funding selective enrollment schools. It was last month. I believe it was 92-8.
The city of Chicago's public schools are grossly underfunded.
Okay.
$1.1 billion. That's what the focus has to be.
Tessa?
Mayor, the CTU is also beginning contract negotiations with a demand for 9% raises or the rate of inflation, whichever is higher. At the same time, the district faces a budget deficit of at least $391 million, which is only likely to grow. Is that request realistic? Where will that money come from?
You know, again, look, the state of Illinois owes the city of Chicago $1.1 billion. And, you know, we cannot lose sight of that. You know, there has been a real concerted effort over the course of decades now to disrupt public education in this city. And without, you know, full cooperation from the state of Illinois, you're going to leave one of the largest school districts in the entire country woefully underfunded. And I'm going to continue to advocate to make sure that the people of Chicago receive their just due.
You're a former teacher. You know, like you mentioned, you've repeatedly said you want to support teachers, students, and neighborhood schools. I mean, I'm sure if you could, you would give teachers everything they're asking for. But, you know, with the face of this funding deficit, on top of that, you also face a political conundrum where you're going to be nailed by critics if they perceive anything that appears to be appeasing toward the CTU. How do you manage that from a communication strategy standpoint during negotiations?
Well, first of all, I have a vision for public schools. I have a vision. Again, I'm uniquely positioned to lead in this moment as someone who's benefited from public education, someone whose children attend our public schools. Again, as you said, someone who has taught in our public school system. And, you know, where there is alignment with my vision for public education and the contract demands from the Chicago Teachers Union, we're going to lean into those areas. And where there are spaces of contention or challenge, we're going to work through it, just like I worked through it with SEIU 73, with their contract, with the parks, and with the Chicago Public Schools, just like we worked through the details of the contract with our police officers, just like we are working through and have we worked through our contracts with AFSCME workers. We're going to work through them.
Your selection of Larry Snelling as police superintendent has played to rave reviews among the rank and file, improving morale. You also, as you mentioned, doubled the pay raises and extended the contract for police officers. But those two votes, rejecting an arbitrator's ruling on police discipline, really stuck in the craw of a lot of members of the union, and they're promising to picket at the convention to protest that. Why was it necessary, sir, to cast two symbolic votes, really, because a judge has overruled those that rejection of the arbitrator's ruling on discipline. Why was that so important to you?
They weren't symbolic, and I'm not quite sure if there wasn't overruling. In fact, what was made clear was that in the most egregious cases where discipline would be necessary, that should be open and transparent.
Right.
That's what the people of Chicago wanted. It just makes sense. Look, people believe, that when people show up for work, that they should be properly compensated. So that there was nothing controversial about that, right? And there's a level of accountability and transparency that the public deserves.
But do you have fences to mend with police officers who are upset about that and are promising to picket at the convention? What do you do about that?
The First Amendment is something that is a part of the core of our democracy. So whether it's this issue or any other issue, of course, I'm going to support any individual who wishes to express their First Amendment right. As far as individuals, who may not be completely satisfied with everything that I've done, look, Fred, I don't know if there's ever been a mayor who satisfied everyone. Now, if I happen to do that, then that would be something to certainly write about, but if the role of the mayor is to satisfy everyone, then
forget
it. We would not have had 56, prior to me. So look, here's what I'm committed to doing is showing up for people, listening to them and collaborating. That's what my administration has done over this first year, whether it's, contracts, whether it's, fighting for the interest of everyday people, workers, whether it's making investments like we're doing with this bond, all of the work that we've done, I've done it working alongside of people, whether at the state level, the county level, city council, and of course, our federal partners as well.
Tessa?
Mayor Stacey Davis-Gates said recently she was ashamed for helping put you in what she describes as an impossible position, and that she believes the transformation you're leading has also led to a tremendous amount of resistance. And she says the muscles it took to get you elected are different from the muscles that you need to develop to lead the city and govern. What do you think about what she said, and why do you think there has been so much resistance? How do you go about strengthening those muscles to govern while you're also in office trying to lead?
Well, you build muscle by actually doing the work. And again, whether it's, the $1.25 billion bond deal, abolishing sub-minimum wage, expanding paid time off, the investment in our young people, I made a commitment to hire more young people. We already seen a 20% increase last summer. I added an additional $76 million to hire more young people this year. So we're positioned to hire as many as 28,000 young people this summer. That's how you continue to build muscle, by actually getting the work done. Look, for decades now, this city has been absent real collaborative, progressive leadership. Leadership that's going to speak to the interests and the hopes, aspirations of working people. That's what I'm doing. And there are people who are adjusting to that. We'll get it done. Make no mistake about it. We're here to work, and we're going to get it done because we've already demonstrated that we can. And we're doing it. There's still more work for us to do, but it's the unique moment that we're in right now is that there's not one entity or one individual that has to do it. And this shared responsibility to build a better, stronger state for Chicago, it's one that previous administrations have been intimidated by. I'm not.
Mariah.
Mayor, turning to national politics and the DNC for a second, many progressive voters who cast their ballots for you, I'm sure, also cast protest votes against President Joe Biden in the primary because of how he's handled the war in Gaza and his support for the Israeli government. You obviously voted for the ceasefire resolution at a time when Biden wouldn't even call for one. I'm wondering, is that something that will stop you from campaigning for Biden's reelection? What role do you plan to play in that? And also, what role do you want to play at the DNC? Will you speak at the convention?
I fully support the reelection of President Biden. What he has done for this country has been refreshing to see his investments in working people. His work to, of course, eliminate student debt. Do we want him to do more? Of course. what I've said repeatedly is that we have to have a safe, vibrant, energetic convention. And that's what I'm working towards, to make sure that people are, safe, but to make sure that the energy that's needed in order to propel President Biden back into the White House for four more years, that we come out stronger. You know, my biggest role in this moment is to ensure a safe, energetic, vibrant convention. And that's what I'm working to do every single day.
When your time as mayor of Chicago is over, whenever that may be, sir, and you've talked about breaking Richard M. Daley's record for longevity, what do you want history to say about Brandon Johnson?
You know, I've been giving a lot more, giving a lot more thought to the people who have made it possible for this type of leadership to even exist. I have the most diverse administration in the history of Chicago. There are more women that are working in my administration than I believe in any other administration in the history of Chicago. We have the most diverse city council right now in the history of the city of Chicago. And we have far more people who have seats at the table where decisions are made. You know, I want people to know that during my time as mayor, that I kept true to representing the interest of all residents and making sure that the table is plentiful for everyone, because I believe deep down in my heart that there's more than enough for everyone.
Mayor Johnson, thank you so much for joining us and taking the time with all three of us. And congratulations. Go celebrate with your family, and we'll see you all next week.
All right. Thank you all very much. I appreciate the time. Bye-bye.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much.
Bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.
You can probably treat yourself to an ad-free upgrade or at least grab an extra latte after getting a Chime checking account with features like fee-free overdraft up to $200 with SpotMe, no minimum balance requirements, and no monthly fees. Open your account in minutes at chime.com/goals24. That's chime.com/goals24. Chime feels like progress. Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. members FDIC. SpotMe eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply.